myself without the coffee and cigarettes that taste like loneliness with sugar spilling out your mouth.
Online childhood. My name is Joshua Turpin. My colleague is Abigail Williams, and today it's just you and me. It's finals week, or technically right now it's reading week, but next week will be finals week. I just timed the episodes badly because I was like, I just need to get these out and I just need to get them going. So this is what we've got. So we're running out of time. We haven't had much time to research and work on the episode we're working on next. We haven't even decided what we're working on next because we're quite busy, and Abigail is also working on stuff with our alma mater because we think that there's a potential that they broke the law based on LGBTQ rights. Not gonna get into it. There are plenty of articles that have been published about it. But I just wanted to have this moment between you and I about how I talk about and think about the last few episodes with the history of the Bible, and also maybe add a few corrections. So, number one, just want to say, I grew up thinking that the Bible was inerrant. It was important to me that it was. I argued about evolution, I argued about the Big Bang, and all that sort of thing. And for one, I didn't understand what those various aspects were actually about, or what they were saying. You receive a bastardized version of those things in certain communities, and it's a thing that keeps recurring where I'm talking to somebody about it, and they're like, I don't want to give any specific examples to call anyone out, but they're like, oh, well, the XX, like, I'll say this, nobody that is ever going to listen to this the person that said this isn't ever going to listen to this. So I'll just say, somebody said, last time I heard, when rivers are flowing, they create ditches of where the riverbed is, and they don't create something like the Grand Canyon, because that's impossible. And it's like, the person that said this doesn't study geology. They don't know about how the process of riverbed creation and canyons works. So it's, how do they know how it happens? Perhaps, I don't know if you're ever sitting on a beach and you're digging your hand underneath, and you're building a sandcastle, and you're building this bridge, and you build your hand, you like push underneath it, right? Like a river flowing underneath the water, and eventually everything just collapses. But it's pretty up and down right there, so maybe that's how it happened. But there's this limited imagination that goes into it. But anyway, the point that I'm trying to make here is, so many things, we actually don't know what's happening. We don't know what's going on. And so this is why we have to listen to the experts. But if you have a particular worldview that rejects anything that doesn't quite fit in with your understanding of the world, which is everybody tends to reject things that don't match their understanding of the world, their epistemology. And so we reject it, and it's easier to reject it. And so my purpose of these first three episodes was to be like, hey, some people that are listening to this, I know myself, it was very important to understand and figure out what this history of the Bible is, and in a way that's written by scholars, in a way that people that have actually studied this, because you're not going to get that information in a church, because they just don't know. It's inaccessible to them. I have spent at least $1,000, probably closer to $2,000 or $3,000, on books researching Bible stuff. Like, it's expensive, and a lot of these books don't end up in libraries or public libraries. They end up in university libraries because it's a research library, right? So even to the public, you have to know which library is going to it. Anyway, side note, a good way to figure out if any libraries close to you have a particular book, WorldCat. WorldCat.org is a great way to get to it. Anyway, the point is, it's inaccessible. And so I'm trying to make it accessible in a way. Another group of people that's trying to do this is the Bible for Normal People. And but I'm kind of having a different bent because their stuff is more about Bible. And Abigail and my stuff is supposed to be more about just multiple different topics. So we're going to dig into more topics and more different aspects. I think I'm hoping that our next thing is going to be able to be gender, because Abigail will be able to take the lead on part of that, and that'll be less work on me, let's be real. But we're going to, like, talk about, like, what does the Bible say, or what are interpretations of what the Bible says about this? What's the philosophy around it? And I'll probably dig into Judith Butler for that. And then what's the science around that, given science is also just a form of philosophy? And so, you know, I'm trying to be rhetorically honest with you all and be like, hey, this is what I'm thinking about. This is my whole point. Because there's this, I was talking to one of my fellow students yesterday. Yes, it was yesterday. And they asked me, like, how do you talk about the stuff that we're talking about in class to congregations? Because nobody's going to want to believe this. We were specifically talking about Song of Songs. She understood, my fellow student, my colleague, understood it as this big spiritual thing, and that's not as accepted among Bible scholars. You're not supposed to do the spiritual thing, you're supposed to dig into it in different ways, sort of like the history of the Bible, and later in this episode I'm going to talk about some of the papers that I'm working on. But and so she was asking me, how do you preach about this sort of thing? Because I specifically said that the way I understand the Song of Songs is that there are two men, one of whom is King Solomon, who mistreats her. His soldiers beat her when she leaves the city. And then there is the person that she actually loves, who lives out in the fields and helps her on her farm that she takes care of and everything. So when you read in these two different aspects, you have to, like, pull out and say, I think this is actually about this thing. So my argument is, like, when Solomon is speaking, he's talking about her neck is like a tower, but when the there are two different series of verses like that. So Solomon's is the more warrior sounding one, and the person she actually loves is the more pastoral, the more natural one. And so what you can bring out of this is the way that power, by the way, I argue that this is sort of like a Solomon forces her to live with him and have sex with him. So in this sense, it is rape. But you can talk about the way that power, even with wise people, even with the best people, influences them. And so they learn to control and take control of people. And so how do you talk about this sort of thing with a congregation? How do you bring up the topic of power and abuse of power and how it leads to rape and that sort of thing? And so it's hard. And so I was talking about, depending on the congregation or the people you're talking to, rhetorically, you take them on a journey with you, but you don't tell them what the end of the journey is until you get there. So then basically what you're doing is they're like, I agree with this, I agree with this, I agree with this, and then you pop the conclusion, and it's like, I have to agree with it. And then of course you have to do something with that conclusion, which is the purpose of this episode. But you have to, the rhetorically, you're guiding people. And so I wanted to be upfront that rhetorically I'm trying to guide you on this thing to say, like, the Bible shouldn't be the only thing from which you draw knowledge. It shouldn't be the only thing from which you draw ideas about the world, how the world's created, even ideas about God. It shouldn't be the only way that you access that knowledge. Different people, you're always already influenced by the way that you grew up and the people around whom you spent time with now. And so just acknowledging that and being intentional about the people you hang out with, of course, but also, like, being intentional about how much time you spend with certain things. It's the very Christian concept of, like, we'll spend more time with God, spend more time with the Bible. Sure. But the real move I'm trying to make throughout this whole thing is to say, like, your understanding of the Bible is just your understanding of the Bible. And I don't mean this in, like, a big spiritual, like, everybody can bring out their own meanings. That is true. But what I'm saying is, it's myself, my family, and Abigail's family as well, who grew up in a particular area in a particular type of Christianity, is to say, how many Lutherans do you hang out with? How many Methodists do you hang out with? How many Presbyterians do you hang out with? How many Catholics do you hang out with? How many Jews do you hang out with? How many Buddhists? How many Muslims? Like, how sequestered are you in your own bubble that keeps you in this space? And so I'm trying to challenge this and to say, like, with this history of the Bible, to say, there have been so many different Bibles. How do you know which one's correct? Different people use different versions of the Bible. Different people use different versions, like some people, the Greek Orthodox Church uses the Greek version. Well, there's a whole bunch of stuff that's different in that, that's not in the Masoretic text, or that takes a different form in the Masoretic text, and which is the Hebrew version. And so we have to pay attention to that sort of thing. You have to spend time with more Christians than just Christians that are in your circle, if you're Christian. If you're Muslim in the United States, you don't really have as much of a choice. If you're Jewish, the same goes for that. I understand that there are Jewish communities, but it functions a little bit differently. And so, like, you can't, or you shouldn't, close yourself off to these other groups of people. The same thing goes, if you are a straight white person, how many Black people do you hang out with? How many Latinx / Hispanic people do you hang out with? How many gay people do you hang out with? How many trans people do you hang out with? Do you know these people close enough that you can have deep conversations about them or conversations about faith with them? If not, you really need to examine how you understand your faith. Like, if your epistemology, your way of thinking about the world and understanding the world and what's going on, is so sheltered and secluded that you don't even hang out with other people that are very similar to you. They just don't agree with these few different marks, or you just don't go to there. Like, attend a mosque, attend a synagogue, attend various different groups of Christian services. Attend a Sikh or Sikh service. It's going to be different. You're going to learn different things. You're going to see different things. And it's okay to have people be different than you. Like, where I'm in the United States, that's sort of a big thing, right, is the multiculturalism. And so, like, embrace it and expand your idea of what it is, even if you cannot imagine spending time in a place that's not similar to your own, say, because I grew up with Christians among Christians. If you're a Christian and you just can't stand the idea of attending a mosque or a synagogue where you don't know anybody there and you just feel super awkward, attend a different denomination. Go to Lutheran church. Go to a Methodist church, as I mentioned. Go to a Catholic service, not just once. Go multiple times. Get to know the people there. And you'll see, like, the idea of saying, like, I'm a Bible-believing Christian, or the Bible is inerrant. Even if you accept that the Bible is inerrant, your interpretation of the Bible is not. And so it's been long established that the creation story in Genesis 1 and Genesis 2, even we have documents from over, like, around 2,000 years ago that are saying, like, Genesis 1 and Genesis 2 are two different stories. And Augustine, in, what, the 4th or 5th century, was saying, if you take the Bible as speaking about the origin of the world and take it as scientific, he doesn't say scientifically, but, like, an accurate representation of what was actually happening, then you're an idiot, and you're making Christians look stupid. And so even if you disagree with Augustine, which is perfectly fine, you have to know that whatever form of Christianity you're following, whatever your interpretation of these texts is different from a whole bunch of other people, from probably the majority of Christianity. And so you have to come to terms with this, and it's taken me a while to figure out what to do with it. I'm still trying to figure out what to do with it. But you have to know that there are other ways of understanding it, and that your way of understanding it, specifically in this case, understanding the Bible as inerrant, isn't even the majority position. That was difficult for me to come to terms with through high school and college and whatnot. I would argue with my teachers and throw out different things. And what I threw out was misinformation that I had been taught. But I didn't know it was misinformation, and they didn't know enough to tell me that it was misinformation and give me the correct information. And this is how we just keep circling, is you have all these different groups that don't actually know everything, trying to beat someone or prove that you're smarter or prove that you're better just to protect the Bible and the Bible's inerrancy. It doesn't make sense. Nobody is going to be able to stand up to that because they just don't know. And you don't know either. You don't know that you're wrong. That's the Dunning-Kruger effect. You have, the less you know, the more you think you know. And as you know more, the more you learn that you don't know. But as you get to a certain level, you begin to understand and you're able to tell, like, I actually don't know this information. And so the people, the general people at your church or in your group, unless they're a specialist and they know how much they know and how much they don't know, and they can, like, actually do the research, these sorts of conversations are more difficult and you can't just accept them or accept the arguments of the speakers that visit, or even debates. You can't just accept public debates because there's a whole big thing about Ken Ham versus Bill Nye the Science Guy several years ago. And, like, Bill Nye the Science Guy and Ken Ham, like, they have bachelor's degrees in education. I think Bill Nye is a little bit more in science. But, like, either, like, Ken Ham doesn't know anything about the Bible in terms of scholarly work. He doesn't really know the history of it. And Bill Nye doesn't really know much about... he's probably studied some, like Ken Ham has, but he's not an expert in evolution. He's not an expert in the Bible either. So it's just two people who are just, like, don't know nearly as much as they think they do, debating it. And it's a huge public spectacle, and it doesn't make any sense. So just go around with other people and just figure out what they think and get to know friends. As I was saying before I cut myself off and talked about something different, if you're a white person, intentionally put yourself in places where you're going to meet people who aren't white. If you're straight, you don't even have to accept that somebody's LGBTQ. Just be friends with them, but, like, actually friends with them. Now, given there's a whole thing, like, eventually you're gonna have to accept them, or you're just not gonna be able to be friends, because they are going to talk about their relationships, if that's the case. And if you fundamentally think it's disgusting or don't agree with them, you're not going to be able to hear those conversations, and you can't be their friend. And that's something that you have to deal with. At least get to know people and understand how their ideas are different, how, if they're Christians, how they understand the Bible different. And I think being friends with Jewish people also gives a wonderful new understanding, a different understanding of what the Bible can be. Last night, I was at a speech on January 15th of 2022. A rabbi and his synagogue were held hostage by somebody who believed that Jews controlled the entire world and the government and everything. And so he's like, you know what? I'm gonna take these Jews hostage, and they're gonna let me talk to a big, powerful rabbi. And I think it's Rabbi Buchdahl. And they're gonna, like, get this woman that released from prison that I want to be released from prison. So we heard a speech about that because starting today is Yom HaShoah. That's the day of the Shoah. The Shoah meaning, like, the destruction. It's been used in other forms, but in this contemporary moment, the Shoah refers to the Holocaust. It's the Jewish way of referring to the Holocaust. So today is the day of remembering the Holocaust. Or today through tomorrow is the day of remembering the Holocaust for Jews. And so we had this speech to lead us into that discussion about anti-Semitism, and the rabbi also talked about racial problems and gender problems and whatnot. He talks about there are rabbis in the medieval period and earlier would put words in God's mouth, would mess with the text and do other things, and this was just acceptable. So as Christians, who ostensibly connect ourselves to Jews, there's the term Judeo-Christian, which it explicitly excludes Muslims, which I'll get to at another point. But, like, we should at least listen to what the Jewish interpretation, what Jews did as well. And then, even to move forward from that, I think after Augustine, after Constantine had connected Christianity to the Roman Empire, after all these big patristic, early church fathers, there were still groups. We see in the Pseudo-Clementines, which are two books. I think the first one was written in the late 400s, late 5th century. And so, even listening to that, or reading that, they're talking about how Paul, this is centuries after Paul had died, Paul was the Antichrist. And these people who wrote this considered themselves Jewish Christians. They followed all Jewish laws, and they also believed that Jesus was some sort of messianic figure, but that Paul had ruined Christianity by making it less Jewish, because they still tried to tie it together. This is later Josh popping in, just saying that because Peter and Paul argued with each other about what should do, like this is recorded in Acts, that we necessarily know that this is that Paul's ideas are different than Peter's, and Peter actually knew Jesus and Paul didn't. So who should we trust, the person who said that we should maintain Jewishness or the person that says we shouldn't? And the first person actually knew Jesus and the other person didn't, and so it's a complicated issue. And so there's this aspect. And then honestly, around the same time, you have Muhammad, who would sort of found Islam, although he didn't write anything down, people wrote stuff down afterward. At that point in time, when people were following Muhammad, and there were Muslim Christians, and they were Christians in every sense of the word, and they also believed that Muhammad was a prophet of God. It's important to remember that there is no singular Christianity. There is no single way of believing or understanding the world, because throughout history, even if something has been named a heresy, there have been Christians that believed this certain thing. And so who are we to determine what is a Christian value, what is the correct way to believe, the correct way to think politically or theologically, to do that? Well, for me, I'm a PhD student, right? So I at least have some sheet of paper for my master's and bachelor's degree that says I'm somewhat qualified to talk about the Bible stuff. But, like, it's rough from there. Because studying the history of Christianity and studying the history of everything just shows that if you think that there is only one way to be a Christian, or that, to turn to a conversation we had before, that abortion, like, you can't be a Christian and support abortion, there have been Christians that have supported abortions for a long time. Even looking into the history, and I could cite Jesus and John Wayne, I can cite many other types of research, there were people, like the guy who started Focus on the Family, who was extremely anti-abortion. When when Roe versus Wade was first instated, people, most Christians, praised it. The guy who started Focus on the Family was like, this is an absolutely wonderful decision, and it's going to be great and help so many people. But then in the late 70s, because of the Civil Rights Movement, a lot of Christians, or because of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, a lot of Christians pulled their students out of public school because it would start busing, and put them into private schools. And this was secretly a way for Christians to be like, well, we still have to pay for public school, but we're not going to let our children hang out with black children. Given the way I'm phrasing this, I'm saying Christians, they're black and white Christians, right? But the idea was that only white people were allowed into these Christian private schools, right? So they were saying, like, they were establishing this separation. Anyway, so in the late 70s, Ronald Reagan picked up on this, and a whole bunch of other Christians. So actually what happened is these private Christian schools, because they were not allowing any black students, the Supreme Court ruled that they would lose their tax-exempt status as nonprofit Christian religious institutions. And so all of a sudden, all these racist, super racist Christians got upset, but because there was just this atmosphere of we can't be explicitly racist, even though we're all in this area where everybody here is explicitly racist, in the North and other areas, because let's be real, it was mostly in the South, these people in other areas, they're not just going to go along. There's this atmosphere of saying you're not allowed to be racist anymore. So what we're going to do is we're going to talk about abortion. Then all of a sudden, all these people who praised the abortion ruling turned, and because the government was saying that you can't be racist in your private school, and so we're going to remove your tax-exempt status. Well, now that's a states' rights issue. That's, you're oppressing us Christians, right? And so people are influenced now because of that decision. In the state of Texas right now, you can't... If a woman was going to die, the fetus was already dead, or the fetus was on its way to dying, and if it was not removed from her womb, it was not removed from the woman's womb, she would die as well. That you're not allowed to get that fetus removed because of the way that Texas law is set up now and the way it defines abortion. And so it's not a reasonable thing, right? And so this is the rhetoric around it that I was talking about earlier. All of this is to say, there are different ways of understanding Christianity. There are different ways of understanding what's correctly. Christians changed their minds, and now it is the official conservative Christian position that abortion's a bad thing, even though for a good 7-8 years, it was the official conservative Christian position that abortion was a good thing. And so things change, and to try to maintain a single idea and say, I'm just following what the Bible says, it's not accurate. Our ideas and our thoughts are more controlled by other forces outside the Bible, and they influence how we read the Bible and how we understand Christianity. Again, my goal with this whole thing was to say, there's more than you know, there's more than you're aware of, there's more than I'm aware of, but I at least know where to start looking for that sort of thing. We have to learn how to deal with this, and anyway, that was a lot of rambling. But again, just the general idea is to say, there's not one version of Christianity, and so to say that you have to be Christian to do this, or to say that, again, to use the Bible in a way as to for arguing with other people, it just doesn't make sense. You can use the Bible to see yourself in it and reflect on yourself, or reflect on our current system and see, okay, like, this happened in the past or whatever. But to pull your ideas about how the world was created and science and all that sort of thing, to use the Bible for that, it just doesn't make sense. The Bible was not written by God. Even if it was, at the very earliest stages, whatever version we have is definitely not that. And you can say God guided each person's hand. You have verses where Paul says that I'm writing this and this isn't God saying anything to me, and other verses where he says God is saying this to me. So does that mean that the rest of it is just Paul saying whatever Paul's saying, or what? And so I just want to... I'm also setting this up to say we aren't going to have... I'm not going to have this conversation over and over and over again. And that's part of the reason we started with this, is... This is sort of a starting point where we're talking about how we've changed and grown, and the Bible was a very important aspect of our childhood, and so we're changing that. I wanna move on to the next topic now at this point to say, okay, now what do you do with the Bible? And for that, the short version is you can do a lot of stuff with the Bible. I mean, as I mentioned, you can take it as a way to examine yourself, or you can argue with the Bible, right? Because if this isn't word for word from God, and there was human intervention in it, you can say, "Why I think this part is wrong." I'm writing a paper right now where in John 6, 1 through 15, Jesus feeds 5,000 people with 2 loaves of bread and 3 fish. I think it is 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish. I don't remember exactly. I'm writing a paper on it. I'll figure it out later. In the story, I think it's 6:23, the people who received that food continue following Jesus, and Jesus says, "You're following me because I fed you and because I heal you, not because you believe in me." And it's like, so you're not going to provide any more healing for these people or any more food for these people because they don't believe in you? Isn't that like just a crappy way to be as a person? So moving forward from that, I take that and analyze that and say, this is the economic thing that's going on. Jesus is saying, I am the arbiter between the blessings of God and you. And the point of this is you're supposed to follow me, and you're supposed to be with me, and you're supposed to let me be your arbiter. And so if you want to receive blessings from God, you have to come from, it has to come through me. And so I turn that and say, like, so Jesus focuses on belief and understanding in this verse. Turning now to the contemporary world, if you're not capitalist, you're not going to receive help from capitalist countries. You're not going to receive help from one of the largest economies in the world, the United States, because it's been documented that a whole bunch of countries who weren't capitalist, who weren't capitalist, they were communist or they were socialist, and the United States was like, we'll help you, but only if you completely restructure your economy to be capitalist and let us invest in your companies and own a part of your companies, right? You have to believe like we believe if you want to receive help. And so I'm arguing, like, this is sort of the idea that John is setting up. John, the person who wrote it, but the book of John, the person who wrote the book of John is sort of setting up this idea of, like, if you want to be a part of our group, if you want us to be able to help each other, you have to believe like we do and do what we do and understand the world like we do. We're not going to help you, which is just a terrible way of being, because it's not about love. And so what you can do, again, like I said, you can argue with it in this way and say, actually, I think a better way to do this, number one, you have to pay attention to what you're doing and what you're saying. But a better way to do this is to say, like, actually, we should just help people wherever, no matter what. Now, this isn't necessary. I'm not saying it's biblical. I'm not saying it's from, I'm not saying I can find it anywhere particular. Now, I can, but that's not the point. The point is to say, because the book of John was written in such a way as to be creating an in-group of that we call the Johannine community, that you're creating this in-group and out-group, right? And so in this language that John is using of saying, you have to believe like we believe, you have to believe Jesus, or we won't help you, it's this way of protecting an in-group. And as contemporary Christians, I don't think that we really need to focus on that anymore. We should focus on helping as many people as possible, first and foremost. Don't require that they believe anything. Don't require that they change anything. We need to help them. We need to make the world better, regardless of what they believe. So I just got back from a quick break. My roommate was like, where are you? And I was like, I'm in my closet. It's just quieter in here. Anyway, so moving on to other papers and other things that I think you can do with the Bible. So number one, of course, like, you can draw spiritual ideas from it. You can draw from it ideas and ways to live life, right? Like I started with, useful for teaching, useful for rebuke, useful for these other things. But it's just about figuring out what the Bible is more about. Like, you can learn from it how to live life, but you can't learn from it about the creation of the world. And also, it's not necessarily the only or the best way to best thing from which you can pull morals. Like, seriously, there are so many immoral things that happen in the Bible, and to acknowledge that, like, these are humans and they're dealing with this certain thing in these certain contexts. Turning specifically to what we'll get to eventually is LGBTQ stuff. Other work that you can do. I think we're going to try to, in the next episode I work with Abigail, I'm going to present one of my papers to you. Basically, in the Septuagint version of Esther, there are a bunch of editions, and in one of those editions is in Esther, Haman gets upset at the Jews, tries to kill all of them, tale as old as time. He writes a letter with the king's seal, and this letter is in the Septuagint version, in the Greek version. And then when Esther convinces the king to overturn the letter, they write another letter over it, or overwrite, as the joke goes. And so Mordecai and Esther write a letter to the people, and so this letter is the letter that allows Jewish people to stand up and fight and kill other people. And so I sort of, like, take this as, like, so if a group of people is being killed by soldiers, at the command of the empire, such as all the Jews who are being attacked at the command of technically the king, because Haman wrote it with the seal of the king, right? So the government is making it okay for the police officers, let's say, the soldiers, the mayors, the regional rulers. Of course, I'm being anachronistic, I'm pulling it out of time and talking about contemporary stuff, to kill people and without receiving any punishment. Then how acceptable is it for that people to fight back? And then I turn that to the Black Lives Matter movement and say, we see in Esther, in the Greek version of Esther, but also in the Masoretic text, it's just less clear, that they have to fight back. And so if we have an issue where there are, not all police are bad, but there are police who are bad, who, even when they do bad things, are not arrested, are not held accountable for it. If they turn the camera off right before they do something bad, and they don't get caught for it, nothing happens of it. Or if they do, if something does happen, so they're just put on leave, paid leave or something, or unpaid leave even. They're not arrested for murdering somebody outside of the bounds of the law because they are the law, like in the Persian Empire. Then is it acceptable for black people, Asian people, etc., to like actively fight against the police? Well, if we take the Book of Esther as like this group of people who is suffering from oppression, they make an argument that like, yes, not only can we have to. And so when you talk about rioting and looting and that sort of thing, where like people didn't even die, but it was just money that was taken, like that sort of thing, then is it like we have a biblical example of this happening? And if you want to argue that the Bible's inerrant, then you have to argue that it's okay for minority groups who are being killed or oppressed by the United States to fight back and kill people. Like, it's in the Bible, and so if you're taking your ideas solely from the Bible, you have to go there. Or you can pay attention to, as I do, the way that power is controlled, and take this argument that, like, the United States has a tendency to push off the issues until, like, you're faced with it. So you have to bring the issues to the fore. And we know that there continue to be issues of racism and sexism and that sort of thing. Like, I mean, it was less than 70 years ago that Jim Crow was still a thing. There are people alive whose parents were born into slavery in the United States. Like, it's not that far away. Everything is still happening, and we're still trying to deal with it. And so my big argument is to say that whenever when you criticize the Black Lives Matter movement or big protests of that sort of thing, then you are, and of course you have to like dig into like what's the actual, just who's in control, who's actually leading it, what are their actual ideas, that's a whole other thing. You dig into it, and you have to figure, and after you do your due diligence and your research, say like, okay, like they're actually doing a thing. And so my speech, my comments are directed toward people in power who say, and I say like, they have to do this because the only way for you to listen is for them to do this. And so, and because they tried, there have been people who've been trying to push for all these different issues for decades, right? People didn't stop fighting for the rights for Black people, Asian people, Latinx people, etc. after the Civil Rights Act. There have been problems since then, lots of problems, and they've been trying to tell us, and we haven't listened. We haven't said that we need more accountability among police. We haven't created more, like, even when you require that cops leave their wear cameras, they can turn their camera off, and you can make that illegal, but that punishment, any punishment that that a police officer receives for turning their camera off is not going to equal the death that's happened when their camera was off. You can't make up for that. That's a whole world that's been destroyed. So there's that. And then another paper that I'm working on is to argue, this is a little more complicated, I sort of follow the way that ethnicity and gender work in the Hebrew Bible, and sort of argue that women can pass their ethnicity onto their children by naming them. And so when the woman is of a different ethnicity than the father, or mother is of a different ethnicity than the father of the child, the father does the naming. And so this is a way of saying, like, even in the Hebrew Bible, you have these men who are establishing that their ethnic identity and all this is important. And, like, you have these, like, ethnic negotiations going on. So there is sort of this hint of what racism or ethnocentrism going on of, like, no. We want people to be the same. If you want to be a part of the community, your child, or if your child wants to be a part of the community, they have to be go through all these rites and rituals to be considered part of the community. And we can't let the foreigner put their ethnicity onto the child. So they have to be like this is a whole thing. And it's, I think, the way I read the Bible, it's there. And so you can't just accept it You have to challenge it and argue with it and say this has a real effect on how we think about race and ethnicity now and how we think about women now.
Future Josh here once again. I wanted to add to my comments that the way relating to women and ethnicity and this sort of thing, there's a long history in the United States of saying someone like Thomas Jefferson raped his enslaved black woman. And he also said that black people were animals and they didn't count as human, right? So was he committing bestiality or was this just rhetoric? And so you focus on this language around women and then you turn to say you have this idea of the welfare queen, who's a woman who just has lots of children, but it's always in pictures at the time that this was a big idea. They were almost always black women, even though the majority of people on welfare were white women. But you use this imagery of gender and ethnicity together. And so this is how it continues to affect us. Like, well, black woman is even more outsider because they're black and they're woman. Because of this, black women are more marginalized. So we have to pay attention to how ethnicity and gender function together. And we're being influenced by these ancient texts. And so we can't just uncritically accept the worldview that the Bible gives us. Because the people there did bad things and they thought bad things. And we still do. And so by reflecting on the Bible, it helps us reflect on ourselves as well.
Another paper is sort of similar to that last one, where, again, looking at the Book of Ruth, Ruth is an immigrant, and so there are all sorts of problems, and so that arise from there. And so, like, so these are things that you can do with the Bible. You can use them to say, this is happening in the Bible. Now let's look at how it has affected the contemporary world, and how we can view it through the contemporary world and view the contemporary world through this text to shed light on the issues. And so, by making your comments about the Bible, you also, you're able to make comments on the contemporary world as well. And so I think that's a very important thing that we do, and that's something that I try to do. I think those are my comments for now. Thanks for listening. My name's Joshua Turpin, and my Twitter is Joshua_A_Turpin, T-U-R-P-I-N. You can follow this podcast at Unlearned Child on Twitter. That's the only thing we have for it at this point. And we'd love your feedback. You can email us at podcast@unlearningchildhood.com. I understand that this was a rant, and if you don't, or not a rant, a ramble. And so if you don't want to comment on it or anything like that, that's totally fine. But I just wanted to give this sort of like, well, what do you do now? And it's like, well, you just you have to identify if your interpretation of the Bible is influenced by your world and everything around your world and everything happening around you. You have to identify what those things around you are and make sure that they're not the only influences on your life. Anyway, thanks for listening.